Extremism and misinformation online after the insurrection. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Kimberly Adams. In the aftermath of the January 6th insurrection, public pressure forced social media companies to increase moderation of misinformation and hate speech. In the process, many users and groups were banned from mainstream sites. So those users, and some of their audience, are moving to alternative social media sites and apps. Jared Holt is a resident fellow at the Atlantic Council, a think tank based in Washington, D.C. He says these alternative spaces have seen noticeable growth.
What we saw after January 6th was this big game of musical chairs almost, where different communities online, whether it be the believers of the QAnon conspiracy theory, just diehard Trump supporters, kind of circling around, hopping from place to place on the internet. Eventually, they settled on kind of a handful of their favorite alternative platforms, but they are still plugged into what's happening in the mainstream.
How many people are using these alternative platforms, say, compared to some of these more mainstream platforms? And what do we know about these folks?
So even the largest alternative platforms can't really hold a candle to mainstream ones. But there are still millions of people using these platforms. And it varies platform to platform. Gab, for example, claims to have millions of users. Telegram has millions and millions of users. And the concern here is not necessarily that anything is inherently wrong with seeking out an alternative place to interact with one another online, but a lot of these alternative platforms that they've turned to in the last year were first inhabited, at least in the far-right political realm, by really, really hardcore extremist ideologues. They're entering a space where, you know, extremists kind of have the home field advantage. And there's a concern there that people, you know, if they're not really careful and really paying attention to what they're coming across, could steer them towards even more radical content.
You just put out a report about how online extremism has adapted and evolved after January 6th. What surprised you the most in that report and in your research leading up to it?
What surprised me is, as far as organizing in right-wing extremism goes and how it relates to the internet, a lot of it's happening on these smaller scales. So if your goal is to get 12 people out to a school board to do a protest against a mask mandate, you don't need to have a channel with 1,000 followers on it. Maybe you only need 100 people in that channel. While at the same time, the rhetoric and ideology that typically been relegated to these fringes and extremes is clawing its way further and further into mainstream conservative politics. The organized part is kind of decentralizing, but the ideology has kind of shown to be centralizing into mainstream spaces.
Who's funding these alternative platforms that, whether they want to or not, seem to become a home for this extremist content?
Again, it kind of varies platform to platform. Stuff like Telegram. Telegram has many legitimate uses across the world that aren't extremist politics, but it is a platform that extremists have chosen for its functionality. That gets its funding from its own sources. Then there's also some of these that exist as explicit political projects. So things like Rumble, receiving money from, U.S. billionaires like Peter Thiel, and things like Parler receiving money from, you know, the Mercer family. So some of these projects have, you know, very clear ideological backers, and others are generating money from just ad content or, you know, the same way any kind of app like that generates money.
Is there an equivalent trend on the left, this creation of a sort of constellation of sites to have content and conversations that may not be permitted on the more traditional social media platforms?
There is, but to a much lesser degree. Some anarchists and like anti-fascist networks have used Telegram, have used platforms like Mastodon to try to, you know, generate the idea of, you know, kind of a separate internet that is more of a safe space for their ideologies. But there isn't the same kind of institutional buy-in, and even just the raw numbers of users are drastically lower than, you know, the right-wing equivalents. So I don't think there's a really good comparison between the two. It does exist to some degree, but what's happening on the political right in that respect is much more significant.
What does this bifurcation of online speech mean for real life politics in the US?
Generally, like what this split is signaling is kind of this like appetite for, I think, a different kind of internet, or like a dissatisfaction with platforms taking it upon themselves to try to moderate against some of the more harmful byproducts of it. And what's alarming to me is, in my opinion, I think these massive platforms should have a very vested interest in moderating against this stuff for the sake of user safety. But, you know, to see buy-in against that idea on such a significant level is a bit alarming. And it also means that the flow of information in politics is going to be further and further away from the sort of traditional flow that we may have seen even just a decade ago. So one of the most readily apparent examples is just how, you know, this is fostering even more these parallel media ecosystems. So people who are on Telegram, for example, and are getting their political news on Telegram will, you know, probably never come across a fact check of anything they're seeing because that's on a different platform, et cetera. You know, and I think it's, you know, contributing further to the polarization of politics in America.
Jared Holt is with the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensic Research Lab. And now for some related links. Jared's report I mentioned came out this week, and we'll have a link to it on our website, marketplacetech.org. It includes charts showing the growth some of the biggest proponents of election misinformation are seeing on platforms like Gab, Odyssey, Telegram, and Parler. It also digs into the online payment services that allow these sites, and those that use them, to keep making money. And Axios has a story looking at the broader echo chamber it argues the right is building, with apps, TV channels, video streaming services, and even cryptocurrencies, all designed to avoid the restrictions on other platforms. Jesus Alvarado, Sasha Fernandez, and Daniel Shin produce our show. John Gordon is our editor. Becca Weinman is our engineer. I'm Kimberly Adams, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.